Today we hear what I can only describe as a staggering story of childhood abuse, which set up the tone of our guest life for the next 40 years. Despite four decades of emotional turmoil, post-traumatic stress, discord and confusion about how to behave around people and in relationships, our guest Gloria White has prevailed through all her diversity. In keeping with her own recovery, Gloria is now a recovery educator at a South Auckland mental health organisation and is passionate about her own hope and recovery and encourages others to follow in her path. And just before we get to meet Gloria, we're going to play a track from Tina Turner, which is back where it started, and it's very relevant to our story, or the story that Gloria will tell us today. Back when it started, from raunchy rocker Tina Turner. And Gloria, thank you for being in the Take It From Us studio. You've got your wellness toolbox here, and you've got your support person, Don, who's more than just a support person. In fact, you might like to explain about Don, because I've only just met him.
Oh, okay, yeah. Don's my husband and things and that, and through all that I've journeyed and travelled through over the 10 years that I've been with Don, he's been my huge support,
A bit of a rock.
Yeah, he's travelled through roadblocks with me, and he's swung on merry-go-rounds with me, but he's never gotten off and left me on my own with them.
Well, that's wonderful to hear that. Tina Turner's song, Back When It Started, when I heard that today, I immediately thought of your story that you had shared with me last Friday. And I just wonder where you might like to start in that story back when it started.
Yeah, I would love to. Just before I start, I'd like to bring on board a poem that I picked up that the author is unknown, except her name was Rebecca, and it's called What If? And it's, what if I were my real self just for a day? Would you still love me, or would you turn away? What if you knew sometimes I hid just what I felt? What if you saw the darkness where my sorrow was held? What if you knew sometimes all my perfections were lost? Would you still love me, regardless the cost? What if my clothes were tatters and my hair all afright? Would you want to know me? Would we still be all right? What if dangers and daggers were all stuck in my brain? Would you want to know me? Would you dare to remain? And even if you love me through all that you see, would I myself still be able to stand just to be with me? And I love that.
What's the significance of that poem to you?
That's actually began the story. It brought back the journey that I had where I was growing up as a little child and things and that. And I suppose it's where I'd like to start. Where did I grow up as a child and that? And in the culture I come from, I normally introduce from my mother tongue. So a little bit I'll do that right now. And it's ko maunga taniwha te maunga, ko tapapa te awa, ko hokianga te moana, ko ngā taki mata whaurua te waka, ko ngā puhi te iwi, taku marae I noho I hokianga. Nō reira, Sheldon, tēnā koe.
And you mentioned the hokianga there. The town that you come from, is that on the hokianga or pretty close to the hokianga?
It's pretty close. It's inland. And I love it there. And it's a little place called Mangamuka. Yeah.
Mangamuka. Yeah. Does that have other connotations in Maori as well?
Yeah, it means willow and everything, and the muka means flax and everything, so
wow.
That's what it means, yeah.
Yeah. So what were some of the significant things that happened in your home in Mangamuka?
Oh, as children, in today's age, I think they call it health and safety now, that grandparents or parents are watching their children when they're at the beaches and at the pools and things. When I was little, we were just let to go down the creek and we learned to survive. So our parents brought up in survival mode and also how to look after ourselves. So as little youngsters and things, my brothers and sisters, all from 10 downwards, we learned to look after each other. They learned to show us how to be safe. They gave us a whack around the ears and things and that, but we learned really fast.
Man, why did you get a whack around the ears occasionally?
Majorly because we went into places and spaces we weren't allowed to go into. And when they said, don't go on the log or don't swim under that log, and we did, you know, we went on the log, swam under the log, and we knew that here comes the whack.
But you survived that okay, but there were some things that did impact your life at a very early age. How do you feel about telling us about those?
I'm okay with that, yeah. As you say, I've got my support person and I've got my wellness tool with me.
Well, what more do you need?
So I'm good with that.
You're better off than James and I. We're here having to look after ourselves.
So I'm well.
You're well equipped.
I am.
Yeah. And I guess what I was alluding to was something that happened in your very early childhood, which really seems to me to have influenced your whole life, in fact, for the next 40 years or so.
Yes. Yeah. In my early, when I was growing up as a child and things, I was exposed to a lot of stuff, and I shared with you around there was violence in my early childhood years. There was alcohol in, when my dad came home from wherever he came home from, either the army or whatever, in came all the drinking, in came all the friends. And so from a baby up to about six, I was used to this environment. It was just a part of our lives, and it was a part of Mum's life as well. So my early childhood was quite shaky. I actually, at a young age, Mum took me along to the doctors and things because she said I was turning blue and holding my breath and knocking out and doing everything else and that. And when she took me to this doctor or GP at that time, he turned around and he said to her, she's mad, and that she has a mental illness and things. So she's an attention seeker, and so she's looking for attention and everything else. And the only thing that Mum remembered out of that was mental. And so I was given the name Maddie, to which I thought was my name. And so for the 5 years, I grew up knowing the name Maddie. And I was addressed and told that that was my name and who I was. Yeah.
So when did you realise that, in fact, your name wasn't Maddie and that, in fact, was Gloria?
When I went to school and then the English teacher turned around and called me Gloria, and I stood there thinking, who's she talking about and who's she talking to? And stood there and she said, Gloria, could you come forward, please? It's your turn to give a talk. And I was looking around the room.
To see who Gloria was.
Who Gloria was. I didn't know a Gloria. All I knew was a Maddie. Or Witty, which some people thought was my nana's name, and other people said, no, that means half-wit, you're a half-wit. And so that's why your name is Maddie, that's why they called you Maddie.
So when was it in your young life that you realised the impact of these sorts of names and how you'd been sort of typecast into being a Mad?
When I struggled with, who in the world is this Gloria?
Right.
Who is this person that this teacher is trying to tell me who I am? That was when I began to realise that I had been labelled.
Who did you turn to for some help to understand what must have been a really confusing situation for you?
My teacher, actually, at that time, I kept asking her, why are you calling me Gloria? Why is my name Gloria? And she said, that is your name. That's what you've been registered as being, and that's your name, Gloria. I said, no, my name's Maddie. And I argued with that for quite a while my first years of primary school.
So this was happening at the age of 5 and 6,
yeah,
7?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you come to accept this, your real name of Gloria?
No, but I took it on board. But the Witty name came through for me for quite a number of years, and people that knew me would always call me Witty. And that's the name I journeyed with after the Maddie stopped, and that Gloria was just there.
What about your friends at school? What did they call you?
Witty.
Witty?
Yeah.
So you were sort of taking on three different names. I mean, what impact did that have on your persona?
I was just like a jumbled up jigsaw puzzle with pieces missing, trying to figure out, am I blessed that I've got all these names? Because I didn't understand what the other two names meant and things. But Gloria, she was still foreign. Just didn't know her.
So was this sort of the basis of your sort of emotional confusion throughout life?
Yeah, yeah. Was that I'd lost my identity and it came through a name and things and that, yeah, I'd completely lost it.
But your identity was also very severely hit by abuse as well, and I'm not sure whether you want to talk about that, but that's a fact.
Yes, it was. As I said, the environment that I grew up in was family coming together, friends coming together, and how beautiful everyone looks when they're sitting down drinking and calling each other bro, sis, whatever the language they used back then. But also, I was a little waitress, so I'd go and get the beers and give it to them, and the more beers they drank, the difference of those drinking those beers became, because after a while, there was smashing of glass and breaking of bottles, and women were screaming, men were yelling abuse. There was a lot of men in my home that I was growing up in. We were sent to the bedroom, or I was sent to my bedroom. I'd wake up at night with men and women in my bed. I thought it was a earthquake shaking in my bed, but it was the behaviours of the men and women that were happening as I was growing up. And I saw that, felt all that, and was exposed to all that till I turned 7. Yeah.
And how do you feel about talking about what happened when you were 7?
7, I was exposed to becoming a woman. I didn't know what that was, but I was familiar with it. Why was I familiar with it? Because, again, I was exposed to men and women sleeping in my bed and using my bed and things. So that was a familiar sight for me in becoming a woman. It was scary because I didn't know what the touches would feel like. But, yeah.
So when you grew up, you became a teenager, what impact did these experiences have in your sort of mid-teens?
Oh, huge. I had huge behaviour problems after I turned 7. Up to 7, I was a good reader. I was in the library. I never went out to play. I just loved being a bookworm. After 7, when I became a woman, my behaviour changed. I was angry. I hit at my mates and things. I lied. I was a compulsive liar. I just turned to become feelings and emotions, and I live by them.
So it sounds as though you were almost living up to that name that you'd been given of Maddie.
Yes.
So it almost determined, it was a self-prophecy that being called that resulted in you behaving as though you were a little bit mad.
Yes. I had the passport to have those behaviours. I had been well trained to have those behaviours, and they were just so acceptable and so familiar to me.
So who noticed these things and did anything about them, or was there no help at all?
No one. No one, because of the name Maddie and Witty. I was just playing up. I was just a naughty teenager. Everything a teenager was, I was, except I was mad. And so mad people, for me, and where I sat, I wasn't seen.
I mean, what did you understand by this term mad?
I just thought it was a fantastic name.
Really?
Because
there
was, it's all I never... Well, I got a neat name. You know, I wasn't
given... You got
given
a license to do anything.
Yeah. I wasn't given a long name that I couldn't pronounce,
right,
in my own mother tongue and things and that. I was just Maddie, and I accepted it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So were there any sort of bright spots in the first 20 years of your life?
Bright spots. What I call a bright spot for me was when I poured a jug of hot water on my leg. That was a bright spot for me. Why? Because I was able to go into hospital and be looked after, and I wasn't being used by the men that came into my bedroom at night. And because at first it was one man, and then it became quite a few of them. I was still coming from 7 and growing from that age.
And
I still haven't
and
reached 10.
No one to talk to, no one to reach out to.
No, not with a name like mine.
Right.
No, it was just put down to bad behaviour.
So relief by self-harming, if you like, by pouring hot water over your leg.
Yeah.
Get into hospital, get some respite.
Yeah. And I also pulled sickies, like sore stomachs and all sorts. My whole childhood after that was spent a lot bouncing in and out of hospitals. I got to know a lot of doctors and things, but they all came out with, they couldn't find anything wrong with me, except my label.
Yeah. So this all happened up north, far north?
Yes, it did.
Right.
Yes, it did.
And how long did you stay in the far north before, I guess, becoming a little more independent and being able to escape?
I ventured out at the age of 16. I didn't complete my college years. I finished at third form because I found ways to stop myself from completing. I knew I was good at it, but because of where I was emotionally in a mixed-up world, I just had to find a way to get out of school before someone found out that there was another side to me. And that was a dark side that was starting to become really apparent. And I actually got to live that dark side.
You got to live the dark side.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a break, give Gloria a bit of a break, and we're going to play another track from Tina Turner.
Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
Sheldon Brown, that was Can't Stand the Rain from raunchy rocker Tina Turner. And it's quite a coincidence that our guest, Gloria White, in fact, has been called Tina Turner in one of her peer employment training programs. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that, Gloria?
We do strengths and cards and that in the peer employment training. And so they were giving out cards, and one of the guests wrote and said, "A strength I see in you is that I love Tina Turner, and that Tina Turner and you remind me of her. So I think you're doing well, and you've got great strengths just like her."
Oh, brilliant. Well, we're talking to Gloria about her life, her early life, and the turnaround. We're going to get to the fact that there has been a major breakthrough, a great turnaround in her life. But you've described your whole life, this life that you've been describing to us, as a facade, a fake. What do you mean by that?
I believe that you fake it till you make it. And so my whole life was that I faked a lot of stuff till I was able to make it so I believed in things. And some of that today, I still have those tendencies to fake it till I make it. Yeah.
It's very stressful doing that.
Oh, it's tiring. It's like having two people at the dinner table, and who am I going to be today? Am I going to be the fake one, or am I going to be the one that makes it? Mm-hmm. And I allude that because I'm a Gemini, that, you know, I have that choice to choose between which person.
Welcome aboard to being a Gemini.
Yeah. Yeah,
I know all about that. Huh? Yeah. Birthday on the 9th of June. Yeah, well, but what did that do for your mental health?
Oh, it rocked my boat. What do I mean by that? I didn't know who I was. I created a virtual world to live in because I needed to survive. I had a real world that I didn't like and things and that, because that real world was a lot of pain.
And dangerous?
It was. It was. It was where my... I actually thought that I was the perpetrator at such an early age, and that the guys that were touching me and all sorts of things, I believe they were the victims. They had turned it around on me, and they had said to when they'd come into my room, they'd actually bring a black spider with them and things, and they'd say that if I told Mum or Dad, I would get more than just one black spider. So this black spider was my fear, terror, and hence why I'm terrified of black spiders.
I'm terrified of the dark as well.
I for years and years I slept with the light on. If I'm on my own, the light would have to stay on, only because I saw the night as a figure that would hurt me. And I lived in darkness and things, and I lived in fear that if I didn't have the light on, then someone would come into my room and it would start again and again and again.
I mean, in this journey, do you recall when you got a mental health diagnosis?
Yes. I was told way back after I'd married my first husband, by psychiatrists, that I had loss of personality. So it was deemed as personality disorder. And then that name came back up 3 years ago.
And when you were given that diagnosis, I mean, were you medicated or given any treatment, taken to hospital, helped in any way?
Not at that moment, because the psychiatrist... I think I became a brilliant actress. I was well trained from year dot to where I sat, and I fooled a lot of people. And that was the reading of Grimm's fairy tales. I pretended I was the princess and I could be anything I wanted. I could even quantum leap into what a glass looked like, how it was made, what it felt like when it broke. And I fooled a lot of doctors and got away with it.
Good training in some ways for what you're doing today, which is your peer employment training, your rap work, where we have met. Yeah.
It is.
We never know when experience is going to help us in a later part of our life.
That's right. It's become like a passport to sitting with other people that are going through or coming through with mental challenges or even AOD, addictions and things. I can sit from an empathetic. I can't say I can understand where people are coming from, because my life and my story is different to their life and their story. But I can be empathetic and I can listen and hear, because that's what was missing from my life, was someone having a hearing. Listening
to you. And yeah. How important do you think that is in mental health, to have people who are prepared to listen?
Oh, hugely. I can walk you through my clinical team and I can tell you what their lives look like, how many children they've got in their families, what their filing cabinet looks like, what the processes on how I should be medicated look like. I can do all that, but they couldn't tell me what I looked like. They could only tell me what I looked like through a diagnosis.
But it doesn't sound as though they were actually listening. You learned more from them than they learned about your story, and you had this phenomenal burden that you were carrying around. Was there nobody that heard that, listened?
No one. No one within that, within the treatment structure that I was put under. But I do know that after I journeyed through and things and that, and what was the change for me, and what did I do to stop that facade or fakeness that I had become accustomed to, I actioned suicide. I decided that enough was enough. And so about 2010, I actioned suicide.
So that was 40-odd years of pain and danger and damage and that sort of thing before you got to that point. And that's only 3 years ago. And in that period, you've turned your life around to become a recovery educator. But could I just ask, in the journey, I mean, I guess by adopting this facade, you were protecting yourself against a whole lot of things, but one of them might have been stigma and discrimination.
Yeah, it was, because, I mean, I knew what stigma looked like. I knew what discrimination looked like. I knew it as a woman, as a Māori woman, and also as a woman with a diagnosis sitting on her. And it wasn't a pretty sight from where I was sitting. Again, when people knew about my labels, they saw me not as Gloria. So again, Gloria got put to the side, and in came Maddie again. So she was always rampant in my life from other people's perspectives and what they saw me. Huge stigma. I didn't get jobs because of it. I was on the bottom chain.
I mean, what were some of the messages that you would give to yourself, talk to yourself about? Were you prone to sort of self-stigmatizing, running yourself down?
Yeah, I believed I was ugly. I believed I was useless. I believed everything negative. I was angry. I mean, I went to bed with all these with all these names that I put on myself. And sometimes they would go to bed and they'd have a good sleep, but they'd leave Gloria up. So I would stay up while all my names and all, as you say, the discriminating things I thought about myself went to sleep. So they had a really good rest so that they could get up and get back in my life again.
But you were left wrung out.
I was tired, I was exhausted, running for sleeping tablets and things and that. I was even hugely self-medicating, looking for how to put Glory to sleep. Alcohol became really abundant,
Well, I guess you'd grown up with alcohol. It wouldn't have been difficult to be tempted by it.
That's right. And I never saw it as being wrong. It just was not wrong,
Let's take another break. We'll give you a bit of a spell, Gloria, and we've got another track from Tina Turner.
Living on the edge of life.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
Brown on Take It From Us. We're talking to our guest, recovery educator Gloria White, and Gloria was just sharing some of her experiences with stigma and discrimination. And I've got a quote here from the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists about caring for a person with mental illness, and it's headed up just the simple word stigma. Many consumers and their families are reluctant to contact mental health services because of the stigma associated with mental illness. Raising public awareness and understanding of mental illness will help to create an environment where stigma is reduced, making it easier for carers to seek support. Providing education for those who are most likely to meet people with a mental illness can encourage people in the community to provide support. It also increases the potential for early intervention and prevention of mental illness. Does that ring a bell with you, Gloria?
Yeah, it does, actually.
I thought it might. Things could have been a bit different if there'd been an awareness of what you were going through, what you were experiencing.
Yeah, hugely. I believe that my track would have been a lot different and things than that.
And easier,
I would have still been, yeah,
I hope.
I would have still been who I am today and things. So that much I do know about Gloria. But, yeah, with what you just read, if there had been ears that would have listened, I would have unfolded my story very quickly.
Were you ever reluctant to seek help because of stigma, the or of what reaction you might have got? I mean, particularly as you'd lived with that name, Maddie.
I was afraid. I was afraid my dad would find. I was looking after other people that were outside of my environment, but were close to me. I was afraid to let my dad know. I was afraid to let my mum know. Different people within my siblings, they were also afraid to tell their story as well and have got similar stories to mine. But we didn't know. We did not know that each one of us siblings was going through something different. And some of us went down the track of being touched. Yeah.
I mean, is this a bit of a cultural picture here that there's a shame associated with having to declare or disclose being that big word, mental illness?
It would have been kind of like it would have brought shame on my family and things. It would have just been huge. They would prefer that, it would have been preferred that I continued to carry the name Maddie and that it was still my fault and not even those that I thought were the victims that were, that were raping me. Mm. Yeah.
Well, today you describe your life as being totally in recovery and loving it. How does it feel to be enjoying that turnaround?
Oh, I love it. I really do love it. I have the freedom now to be able to be who I am. I'm creative, I'm colourful, so the virtual world that I lived in, I now have reached that destination and that with that, but now I can do the journey. And so the journey is that it can get bigger, better, brighter, and I can learn a lot of new things.
And some of the things that you have been learning is peer employment training.
That's right.
And I had the privilege of coming along to be the guest speaker at a graduation of Recovery Innovations Peer Employment Training course workshop, and Gloria was very much alive and passionate about the graduation of these peer employment people. And you were such a live wire at that graduation.
And that's because there's a lot of mutuality. Though I'm the peer recovery educator, when we're in the training, in the classroom and things and that, it's about mutuality. And that's being on the same lived experience as each one that has come into the classroom. No judgments, lots of respect and lots of growing and things. I always say to them, allow the changes to come, but grow and don't do the change too fast.
And I guess you're very pleased that one of your graduates is, and many of your graduates are picking up peer employment work after graduating from the Recovery Innovations Peer Employment Workshop.
Oh, yeah, I'm over the moon. Why is that? Because they already had it in them. And all they had to do was to be able to go back and revisit themselves and bring out all their strengths and things. Huge amount of strengths. So our journey is then, let's work with strengths, not what's wrong. Because the person can grow the what's wrong and work with that.
Yeah, well, that is a very strong focus at Framework, where I work, to identify the strengths. What would you say your strengths are today?
Wow, you know, it took me a long time to have a look at my strengths. And again, I've just got a couple things here. I've got a book full, but it was the trainees that delivered my strengths. And that, and a couple here was a strength. I see in you grow. You're dependable and confident. I'm positive and focused. I can be happy, and I'm free spirit. I'm a willow tree. I'm a butterfly. Honesty, unique, dress sense, and everything else.
Say that the town that you came from was a willow?
Yes.
And
yes.
So somebody has spontaneously recognised that you're a willow tree?
Yes.
Ah, that's a coincidence as well.
It is. So, and that's where that's where I find my strength, yeah.
Well, we've got Wallace along here today too, and Wallace is a very attractive teddy bear. What's his significance, Gloria?
Wallace is used in the classroom a lot, and he gets everyone to introduce each other's names. So they introduce Wallace, and then they introduce the person next to them, and Wallace goes to that person. Then the next person introduces Wallace, that person introduces the person before them, and the person after them, and their own name. So it's just about getting familiar so that we can validate when we're working with people out in the community.
And does Wallace introduce himself too?
Yes, he does. But he's very quiet.
Yes, in a quiet, very low-key fashion. Well, let's come back to our guest with Wallace, who's got prime position in the studio here. He's looking absolutely wonderful. And Don, who's Gloria's support person, is there anything that you'd like to say to wrap this interview up in terms of maybe the main factors that achieved your recovery?
Yes, that you're not alone, and if you're looking for support and things and that, where one door shuts and or even one ear closes, continue to look for the ear that will hear you. Don't give up. Ask for help. Use all the resources that are out there, the 0800 lines and things like that.
But do you work for Recovery Innovations, and they are a wonderful organisation doing some great work. Focus on wellness recovery action planning, and you've got your wellness toolbox here. Would you like to just let us know what's in that wellness toolbox?
I have a journal that I write in when things come up for me. I continue to carry my strength cards that the guests that come through the training program write and give to me. I have my perfume bottle that I love. It's purple. I'm a purple girl. And things and that. And I have my nail polish and nail polish. I love them.
Well, yeah. Purple is something that crops up a lot in rock music, isn't it? Have you got any particular groups that have the name Purple in them? That,
like Deep Purple?
Deep Purple? Purple Haze?
Yeah.
Purple Haze is a track, I think, James, isn't it?
I think Prince sings Purple. Purple Rain. Purple Rain. Love
it's
that
probably
song.
Purple Rain, not Purple Haze. I'm thinking that stuff I take at night. Well, look, it's been an absolute pleasure, Gloria. I do need to explain that when I went out to see Gloria last Friday, the plan was to talk to two or three more of her graduates, and somehow, just spontaneously, Gloria told me her story, and I guess I couldn't resist having Gloria on air to tell that story, and we're going to revisit talking to some of the graduates at another stage. How
plane, drifting through the wind, wanting to start again. Do you ever feel so paper thin, like a house of cards, one blow from caving in? Do you ever feel already buried deep, 6 feet under screens and no one seems to hear a thing? Do you know that there's still a chance for you, 'cause there's a spark in you, you just gotta ignite the light and let it shine. Just on the night, like the 4th of July, 'cause baby you're a firework. Come on, show them what you work, make them go as you shoot across the sky. Your original cannot be replaced. If you only knew what the future holds, after a hurricane comes a rainbow. Maybe a reason why all the doors are closed, so you could open one that leads you to the perfect road. Like a lightning bolt, your heart will glow, and when it's time you know, you just gotta ignite the light.
Your language on planetaudio.org.nz.
The Holy Archdiocese of New Zealand of the Ecumenical Patriarchate presents In the Narthex with Father Paul Patitsis. Join him as he shares with us the ancient apostolic faith of the Christian Greek Orthodox Church. Friday afternoons from 3:15 or anytime online. planetaudio.org.nz/InTheNarthex.
Tune in and save the environment, the biota, and ultimately ourselves. With me, Tim Lynch, on Green Planet FM 104.6. Every Thursday morning, 8 until 9. A solution-oriented program that gives hope to future generations to come.
Thank you to the award-winning team, Take It From Us. Join them again next Tuesday lunchtime at 12:30 on 104.6 Planet FM. Stand by now for the regular weekday broadcast from Radio Buddhist Youth at 1:35.
was a Jezebel, the Brixton queen, living a life like a backstreet dream, telling the lies when the truth was clear. I think she knew what I wanted to hear, spinning them around like a wheel on fire, walking on tightrope and love's highway. Fatal attraction is where I'm at, there's no escaping me.
I just wanna be I'm lying in the midnight hour, holding you just like a dream. Love is never what it seems when you touch, and you're holding me the way you do. Girl, you make my dreams come true. You make my dreams come true.
She holds me back or she goes too far, winding me up just to let me down. So emotional, gagging down. There's more to this than meets the eye, a devil woman locked inside. With the full moon rising, I was scared, I think I was possessed.
I just wanna be close. Every time your body's next to mine, something deep inside of me wants to love you endlessly.
When you touch, girl, you don't know how it makes me feel.
I just can't believe it's real.
Love's highway, fatal attraction is where I'm at. There's no escape.